It's been ground zero in the Gabby Petito case. That lawn out front of Brian Laundrie's house, from protesters to police to the press, it is never a dull moment. And then came today and one of the more bizarre scenes out front.
Do you think you'll do any interviews at some point, sir?
How do you feel to know that Gabby died of strangulation in the wilderness of Wyoming? How does that make you feel?
We will take you to Northport, plus a one-on-one with the Wyoming coroner who delivered searing news today to Brian Enten that Gabby Petito was indeed strangled by human hands. How does that square with body cam video of Gabby describing how Brian grabbed her face? Also tonight, it'll take more than lab reports to make or defend a murder case, if we ever get there. Gabby and Brian's relationship will also be under the microscope, and my experts know exactly where to look. Their insights this hour on Banfield. It's only been a day since the wrenching news was revealed that Gabby Petito had been strangled and throttled to death. And even though the coroner was kind and helpful, there was just so much he simply could not say. Which leaves the puzzle of what happened to Gabby Petito and who did this to her far from solved. Make no mistake, we have plenty of clues and millions of people following the case who have floated plenty of theories. Mostly, those theories involve Brian Laundrie and his curious and silent behavior, not to mention his disappearing act. But he hasn't been charged with anything yet, except bank fraud. Highlight the yet. So the day after we have all been left to ruminate over the news of Gabby's violent death, you cannot but be surprised by the behavior of Brian's dad, Chris Laundrie. A man who was kept hiding in his little yellow bungalow for the lion's share of this agonizing saga. A man who dared not even emerge to mow his own lawn for like a month in Florida. So you would probably agree that today, just one day since learning how Gabby died, strangulation, manual, that he chose to make this public appearance. Judging by the thousands upon thousands of people who watched a live stream of this very strange decision by Chris Laundrie, it was by far one of the more surreal exhibitions we have seen on that front lawn to date. I mean, 1 month, no one mows the lawn. Full month in Florida. And today's the day Mr. Laundrie decides to do this in front of the press and the protesters? News Nation's Brian Enten witnessed the whole thing. I don't even know where to begin. This is something, Brian, that you have said. You have said over and over, they don't come out even to mow the lawn. You talked to him while he was actually mowing. Did you get the impression he might have said something, that he was about to say something, or did he even look at you?
You know, I did get the feeling he was going to say something at one point. He sort of paused, and I thought this is going to be the moment where he's going to speak and say something, and then it was almost like he reminded himself not to talk, and he continued. But it was surreal, Ashley. It started before the sun came up. He came out this morning very, very early. We were out here. He got into his red truck. He left for about 15 minutes, and he came back with a little gas tank, and that's when we thought to ourselves, okay, this is going to be the moment where he mows the lawn. I didn't care so much about him mowing the lawn. What I was interested in is maybe this would be a time that we could try to get him to answer a question, because when he goes to and from the truck, which is the only other times we've tried to talk to him, it's so quick and he just rushes to the truck. But today when he was mowing the lawn, as you could see, I mean, he was right here near where we were standing, me and several other reporters. We were like within a foot of him. So we had a chance to make eye contact. I thought maybe for a second we could try and gain his trust and he would answer a couple of questions. Again, when he was over there near this makeshift memorial on the corner of his lawn and he was weed whacking around that, I thought there was a moment he might talk, but he didn't.
But I think that, and I was reading the comments of all your followers during this live stream, and many of them said the same thing. There's nothing wrong with mowing the lawn. It's the day that you choose to do this very visible activity out on the front lawn with press and protesters. It is the day after we just learned the worst news possible, that Gabby suffered a painful and violent death. And this is the one day out of over a month that he chooses to come out and be so visible. It just... I mean, your followers are not idiots. They noticed it right away. They said, really? Today? This is the day you choose? Could you not have hired someone? Could you not have chosen another day?
Yeah, the timing was certainly very strange the day after the coroner made the announcement about the strangulation. We certainly weren't expecting it to happen today, but I'll tell you, being here and watching the whole thing from beginning to end, it did sort of seem like he was on a mission, like he had mentally said, I'm going to mow the lawn. I know the media is there, but I'm just going to look straight ahead and I'm going to keep mowing. And just sort of a side note, I mean, the neighbors have said that he did religiously mow his lawn every single Monday and that his yard was meticulous. And up until today, I mean, it was overgrown. It was really turning into a mess. So I would suspect that was starting to bother him. So he came out and he was on a mission and he mowed the lawn.
Well, I am very curious about the memorial. They came out, they removed the sign. They came out, they took away the laundry baskets under cover of darkness at 1 o'clock in the morning. They did not want to be seen. But today, describe for me how specific he was in front of all the cameras not to disturb anything in that memorial. And if he could have read some of those messages, what he would have seen as he was weed whacking around the memorial.
Yeah, let me take you over there. First of all, I'll show you. There was another laundry basket that turned up tonight. You remember there were a bunch on the lawn the other day, and Roberta and Chris came out and took them away. But there's another one out here tonight. But yeah, this was kind of the interesting spot today with when he had the weed whacker over here, because he was going around the memorial, but he didn't disturb it. I mean, it was almost like he was accepting that it was here. And this was the spot where I felt like he was possibly going to talk to the media. When I asked him, do you have anything to say to Brian? He seemed to pause right in this area. And again, that was really my intention of even being out here and just trying to get him to say something. But again, he didn't say anything, Ashley.
So I was wondering, since that news yesterday, which was, you know, really hard to hear, that I think in the back of our minds, we all had hoped that maybe Gabby died accidentally, that maybe there was some other explanation to all this awfulness. And yet the only explanation was that it was more awful than you could imagine, sort of hand-to-hand manual strangulation. We're going to get into why we know exactly that there were hands-on. It's not just that it was called manual strangulation. The coroner actually let you know something very interesting. We'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, I would assume that a lot of protesters might have shown up just angry, outraged, and frustrated by the awful news.
You know, it was actually quiet out here today. And again, I think I told you this a couple of days ago, the protesters sort of have a different plan now. They realized that the neighbors were fed up with the bullhorn, so they have been talking to neighbors more one-on-one. They went back to Cassie's house. They haven't been doing the typical bullhorn protesting that we have seen out here, but you mentioned how difficult the news was to process about the autopsy. I'm hearing that from everyone. I mean, I think this is one of those moments in this story where people are having a hard time fully digesting it because it's so awful. Kind of like when we saw the body cam video for the first time, when we saw what was really going on in their relationship. I think this was a similar moment. It's been especially difficult, obviously, for survivors of domestic abuse.
I mean, and we all feel like we know her, given the fact that there was just so much, you know, social media content that they had, you know, given out in their lives, that we would follow along. We felt like we got to know her. We felt like we got to know her joy of travel. And that is often what makes a big story, is the amount of video that brings a person to life instead of just a text or a, you know, a track. Let me ask you about this other moment in the darkness, which I thought was odd. It happened before daylight today. Obviously, you work very early and very late. You saw Mr. Laundrie come out before the whole mowing business. You saw him come out and leave and return with a gas can. What was going on there?
Yeah, so he left again. It was about 15 minutes. We weren't sure where he went. And then he returned a short time later, pulled in, and he had the gas can with him. And he took it into the house, which was interesting. And it was early. I was still tired, so it didn't occur to me at first. But then the more I thought about it for a couple minutes, I'm like, oh, I think this is going to lead to him mowing the lawn, which is exactly what happened. He waited for the sun to come up, and then he started.
Okay, let's take a look at the moment, because you had some time to throw some questions at him while he brought those gas cans out. You and another reporter who were on site early. Let's roll that and listen to how he responded to your questions then.
Mr. Laundrie, any reaction to the autopsy results? Do you have anything to say to Gabby's family as they're dealing with learning about the autopsy results?
Has he ever tried hurting Gabby in the past that you know?
Why the gas can? Why are you getting gas?
Were you surprised when you heard the news, or is this something you expected?
Mr. Laundrie, why aren't you saying anything? Is there anything you want to say to Gabby's family? Do you know where Brian is?
Why the gas can?
So I really thought that perhaps this being the day after after the autopsy report came out, that maybe Mr. Laundrie would have a moment where he wanted to say something to Gabby's family, even something short. But again, that didn't happen.
I'm still curious as to why the pre-dawn trip for gas. I mean, clearly at the time you wouldn't have known that, you know, he was going to do the lawn. But why did he need to leave in the darkness to get the gas?
Well, I think, you know, it's noticeably cooler here in the morning. It's obviously a very hot time of year in the middle of the day. So I think he probably wanted to get the gas for the lawnmower. And then as soon as the sun came up before it got really hot, he was out mowing.
All right, Brian, when we come back after the break, we're going to dig into your interview with Dr. Brent Blue. There were a lot of things that you got out of him that I didn't expect, and it was a far more fulsome information session than yesterday's, you know, press conference, where we didn't even get anything more than, you know, manual strangulation. It took a report to tell us that there was throttling. And today, you learned a few more really intriguing things, not the least of which has led us to go back over old videotape and discover something new. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about your interview and play some of those revealing moments with Brian Enten right after this. Back now with Brian Enten, who had a sit-down interview with Dr. Brent Blue via Zoom, the coroner, who performed the autopsy on Gabby Petito. I was very interested in one of the things that you ended up discussing with Dr. Blue. And I have to ask you this question, Brian, and it was about the clearing up this notion of what he said publicly yesterday. He called it manual strangulation. Then it came out in the report that it was slash throttling. Then he said in media reports that that could have involved, anything other than mechanical, which left open the possibility of a ligature. And then he really got clear with you. So explain what happened.
Yeah, so with this press conference yesterday, it was kind of disjointed. You had so many people in there. The connection wasn't great. And I think he had a hard time getting his message across. So having the one-on-one conversation today with Dr. Blue really, I think, went a long way because he could explain things a little better, at least the things that he is allowed to talk about. You mentioned the cause of death, strangulation. We had him explain that.
Dr. Blue, you said yesterday that the cause of death was manual strangulation, throttling. Can you explain what that means, especially the throttling part?
Throttling generally means that it was done with human hands as opposed to an instrument. It doesn't necessarily have to be, but manual strangulation basically means that it was not done with equipment.
How do you determine that?
Well, it's determined by the nature of the injuries around the neck.
So, you know, again, these things are not necessarily easy to talk about because they're awful when you think about what happened to Gabby, but he explained it. I mean, this manual strangulation and explained that it did involve someone using their hands to strangle Gabby.
Very specific and what we had not heard before, and also that little nugget that he said, by nature of the injuries around the neck. I'm going to get into that with Dr. Larry Kablinsky in the next block, a forensic scientist who's going to have a lot to say about that little piece of information. In the meantime, this other question I have for you, Brian, it involves the intricacies of this particular autopsy. Every autopsy is tricky, but this one, given the 3 to 4 week window, well, that made, you know, the work on the body a lot more difficult. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, he said they had to bring in a specialized forensic pathologist because essentially of the condition of the body. We know that it was outside in the elements for 3 to 4 weeks. There was a lot he would not get specific about because of the ongoing investigation, but take a look. Listen.
What sort of challenges are involved in an autopsy when a body, as you described yesterday, has been out in the wild for 3 to 4 weeks?
In the situation where any body is out in the outside, whether it's exposed to the elements and insects and animals, there is various forms of decomposition, and that decomposition usually runs a very specific course. We use a forensic pathologist, anthropologist, and other techniques to determine injuries and in spite of obvious changes that occur over that period of time.
And so I tried to get more specific with him about the condition of the body. Again, difficult to talk about, but ultimately, you know, this is going to be critical evidence. This is going to be big if there is eventually a trial. So we wanted to learn a little more about some of the specifics. But again, because of the FBI investigation, that was about as specific as he would get. Excuse me.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. Look, I covered Casey Anthony, and the condition of Kaylee Anthony's body was make or break for that case. Cause of death was just so hard to pinpoint because of the condition of the body. So it's important while difficult. I understand it. Okay, a really big development that you got today, Brian, that was unclear yesterday, again in interviews made less clear by Dr. Blue, and that was this accidental utterance of domestic violence while he was talking about the autopsy of Gabby, which made everybody think, are you saying this was domestic violence? Again, in media interviews, he just said it was just an utterance. Well, that didn't clear it up, but he did clear it up with you. And I have that question for you. How did he clear it up?
Yeah, and again, the reason this is important, because on Twitter earlier, a lot of people were saying, why is this even a big deal? Of course, she was in a domestic relationship. But when he started talking about domestic violence, of course, you now had the connection possibly to Brian Laundrie. We weren't sure if it was a slip-up. I asked him about it today. Take a listen.
When you mentioned domestic violence yesterday, sort of towards the end of your press conference, can you elaborate on that a little more? Were you talking specifically about Gabby's situation, or were you talking sort of more broadly?
I was talking more broadly there were indications that Gabby was in a relationship, a domestic relationship, which could play a part in this case, but I don't have any direct evidence of that.
Okay, so, you know, could have played a part in this case. He didn't go all the way there, but still interesting that he's talking about it.
Well, and fascinating, he uttered the words, "I don't have any direct evidence of that." That's interesting. And look, things could play out differently. Perhaps he doesn't know specifically the, you know, comparatives of DNA, et cetera. But that is very, very interesting nonetheless. But Brian, it did make us look back at that incident in Moab, right? And now when we hear that Gabby, as of yesterday, we learned it's manual strangulation. We now have that moment where Gabby tells the police officer, he grabbed my face and it left an injury. Like now that is a completely different piece of tape. It means everything now, given what we have seen happen with the cause of death with Gabby. I mean, that had to strike you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was obviously for many of us one of the more disturbing parts of the body camera video. I can remember it in my mind right now where she's sitting in the police car and she says that he, you know, hit her face basically and that the side of her face was stinging. And at that moment, I just thought, you know, like this, you know, I couldn't believe it. And now that does fit into the timeline with what we're learning from the autopsy.
Does it ever? I mean, he grabbed my face and it hurts. He said he grabbed me with like his nail, which is definitely a cut right here. I can feel it. If I touch it, it burns. So the physical grab of Brian Laundrie on her face, now coupled with the notion that whomever did this to her used hands on physically next to that face. This just really stood out to me, Brian.
Yeah, and I want to clarify, when I just said I couldn't believe it, I didn't mean that I couldn't believe that it happened. It was so sad to see again. I found the body cam video to be one of the most disturbing parts of this whole entire story. So it was just that moment in the car when she talked about her face and now relating it to what we know about the way she died with the strangulation. It's just so, so disturbing.
I mean, it just is. Brian, thank you for all your great work again. I mean, just you work so many hours. I hope you have comp time. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ashley.
Brian Enten doing the job for us yet again tonight. You know, we learned something from the coroner in Gabby's case today that we didn't know yesterday, and it's big. That little detail about human hands around the neck and the reason that the coroner told Brian Enten how he knows it's human hands around the neck. Let me repeat it. By nature of the injuries around the neck. Well, when we come back, one of the most renowned forensic scientists in the country is going to tell me why that is so incredibly significant in terms of tracking down information that leads to her killer, identifying the killer. That's next. It was not completely clear, even after the coroner in the Gabby Petito case held a half-hour news conference to answer questions. That happened yesterday. But today, it is clear, crystal clear. And I am not sure if it really makes it any easier to track down and prove who killed Gabby, but I have a sneaking suspicion it helps. Gabby Petito quite literally died at the hands of another human being. That is what strangulation throttling literally means. Here to help shed some light is Dr. Larry Kablinsky, Professor Emeritus of Forensic Science at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Larry, yesterday, Dr. Brent Blue, the coroner, would only say strangulation. And then in the report, he added the word strangulation throttling. And then in media interviews later, he said strangulation could have involved an implement like a ligature. Manual strangulation is just not mechanical. But then today with Brian Enten, he was crystal clear, saying that that definition, throttling, is the key word, meaning she died with someone's hands around her neck. How is that going to be helpful in terms of finding out who those hands belong to?
Well, first of all, Ashley, there are three kinds of strangulation. There's hanging, ligature, and manual. And manual strangulation involves the hands and the fingers. All three of these devices will cause asphyxia, meaning that the brain is not going to get oxygen. And the brain cannot survive for more than 5 minutes without oxygen. The damage is irreversible. So this kind of asphyxia, this kind of strangulation, kills people. Very common in domestic violence. But that's we'll get to that in a little bit later. The neck is a very vulnerable structure. And if hands were on the neck, and a lot of this depends on the status of the body, which is another thing we need to talk about. But if the hands were on the neck, then touch, toilet touch, DNA, whatever you like, there's going to be a transfer of skin cells from the hands and the fingers onto the victim's neck. The FBI did collect DNA specimens. We really don't know whether those specimens are going to reveal anything. First of all, it may be so decomposed that the DNA is going to be useless. On the other hand, the likelihood is that there will be DNA present, and then we have to see what the source is. It could be Brian Laundrie, or it could be somebody else. We don't know. So we have to wait till the analysis comes back.
Even if they could find DNA of Brian Laundrie, this is his fiance. They live in a van together. Right. That would be something I would think you would find if you are sleeping in such small, close quarters. Let me ask you the other part of that, though, because you and I have done this work for a long time. So I think I know what you're going to say when I ask you about 3 to 4 weeks out in the wilderness. I think that is an extraordinarily complicating factor. But Dr. Blue said something to Brian Enten today that stood out to me. I did not expect him to say it. I did not expect him to have the finding, but he said these words. He said, the manual strangulation could be determined, quote, by the nature of the injuries around her neck. And to me, that said, they could see something, perhaps on tissue. And to me, that's a boon in the forensic industry, isn't it?
Without a doubt, having soft tissue makes a big difference. There's a lot of information there. The neck is a very vulnerable place on the human body. The jugular veins on the outer portion of the neck, the carotids more internally, the strap muscles, four pairs of muscles on both sides of the neck. You've got the cartilage on top of the trachea, the thyroid, the cricoid cartilage,
right?
The thyroid cartilage, and the hyoid bone. It is a bone with three components. As you get older, they fuse. In early development, they're separate structures, but they fuse and they form a U-shaped bone. The tongue is attached to the hyoid. Here's the key: that in strangulation, you can break the hyoid bone. So even if you have a skeletonized body, if you see a fracture of the hyoid bone, you think straight away of strangulation. But I should tell you, statistically, that only about a third of strangulations end up in a fractured hyoid bone. But that is an indication of strangulation. But there's a lot more. If there is soft tissue, you're going to see hemorrhage. You're going to see all kinds of evidence. The cartilage, the two forms of cartilage, the thyroid cartilage, cricoid cartilage could be damaged. You could have damage to the trachea and also the esophagus. And so there's evidence there in soft tissue that there was a manual strangulation.
Yeah, Larry, let me ask you this. I just can't recall right away what case it was, but I know I have covered a case with you where there were handprints that were in such a pattern that they were actually compared to the accused. And I know it would require a specific amount of soft tissue to determine that kind of a pattern, but it can happen. You can determine size of a hand, the actual positioning of a hand. It may not be the most accurate, comparison, but it's one more data point, isn't it?
It's a data point, but it's a characteristic that is not unique to any individual. So I think you can rule out somebody based upon that, but I don't think it's really solid evidence in a courtroom. I think, as I started pointing out before, if you see fingerprint impressions around the neck, that's the area to take DNA from. Under those impressions, surely there's going to be his DNA. Brian Laundrie's DNA is maybe all over the body. I wouldn't say that that's a significant finding, but finding his DNA under those fingerprint impressions on the neck could be damning, and that would be very important in litigation.
I just remembered the case. It's Amanda Lewis in Florida, and they determined in the courtroom that the fingerprint pattern on her face, on the child's face that she was convicted of murdering, was her fingerprint pattern. I always thought that to be absolutely fascinating, but they did use it in that case, and that's what made me think about Brian. Larry, I always love having you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Will you come back?
Sure.
Okay, Larry Kablinsky joining us, one of the best in the business. And I love hearing that, of course. So, okay, you heard the Wyoming coroner say this quote, "There's no direct evidence that Gabby Petito was a victim of domestic violence in his work," right? That is a key finding, and it perked up a lot of ears because of this tape. We saw body cam evidence of an incident with our own eyes, and a witness said he saw Brian hitting and slapping Gabby weeks before she died. So is what the coroner said important to the person who may be arrested in this case if there is going to be one? And the answer is, you betcha. My experts tell us why next. We don't know exactly which day Gabby Petito died, but if it was an average day, statistically, six people were killed in this country by their spouses or their intimate partners. We also don't know, and this is really important, whether Gabby Petito was one of those six. Whether she was involved in domestic violence, as the Wyoming coroner implied in his news conference before telling our Brian Enten he has no direct evidence of that. That is big news. It's big. But we do know about that police interaction in Moab, Utah, a couple of weeks before Gabby likely died. And it is impossible to watch it now, except through the lens of all that has happened since. I want to welcome two very knowledgeable and experienced voices to this discussion. Robbie Ludwig is a psychologist. She's a clinical therapist and an author. Among her books, and this is telling, is Till Death Do Us Part, Love, Marriage, and the Mind of the Killer Spouse. I am also joined by attorney, legal commentator, and longtime network news reporter, Lise Wheel. Ladies, thank you so much for being here. And I'm glad it is you both, because today, when Brian Enten did the interview with the coroner, and the coroner specified that this was hands-on manual strangulation, throttling, which he had not done yesterday and he had not done on the network newscasts last night, it was clear that she died with someone's hands around her neck, and it immediately got us all thinking to that moment in Utah on the body cam in that domestic incident where she specifically spoke about having a hand right there next to what would be her throat, this time instead her face. Let's take a look at it and we'll discuss.
Where did he hit you? Don't worry, just be honest.
He grabbed my face like this. He didn't hit me in the face. Like, he didn't punch me in the face or anything.
Did he slap your face or what?
Well, he grabbed me with his nail, and I guess that's why it was. I definitely have a cut right here because I can feel it.
Yeah.
Touching it burns.
Let me just repeat those last words she said. He grabbed me with his nail, which is why I definitely have a cut right here. I can feel it if I touch it. It burns. That is a grab that hurts. Dr. Ludwig, I'd love you to just tell me your thoughts now, connecting that moment that we're looking through with an entirely different prism.
Well, listen, a lot of times when there's abuse in the relationship, it just escalates. And it's very likely her partner was growing more and more out of control. Maybe due to the frustrations, whatever was going on, he was becoming more dangerous. And it sounds like Gabby really took a lot of responsibility for what was going on in the relationship, which is not so uncommon in abusive relationships, where the woman is so psychologically just run down and they really take responsibility for their partner's abusive behavior and they really believe that they have triggered their partner. So this is just very sad, just hearing all the details behind her death. And one can imagine how frightening and scary it was.
So, Lise, I'm, you know, trying to put on the in advance of any charges, let's be clear, Brian Laundrie's not been charged with anything with regard to Gabby's killing. He's been charged with bank fraud. But, you know, most people are looking at him having taken off into the abyss and thinking that's consciousness of guilt. And it wouldn't be weird if he were charged. Is there a prosecutor out there in this jurisdiction somewhere looking at that tape from Moab and saying, aha, that man grabbed her face hard enough to leave a mark that burned, that was cut? It wouldn't be so much of a jump to think he might lower that hand.
Of course it's not a jump. And of course a prosecutor, many prosecutors, are having that same thought. And Robbie's absolutely right that we know that domestic violence escalates. So it starts with something like a push or a slap, something intimate like that, especially around the face, that's so intimate. And then it can escalate in the most horrible times to murder. And if this was murder by Laundrie, then it was done in such an intimate way again, to the point where, you know, I hate to say this, but Gabby was looking at her killer when she drew her last breath. And we know, unfortunately, as you mentioned at the beginning of the segment, Ashley, that, you know, domestic violence is on the rise. More women are killed by domestic violence than breast cancer. And this pandemic has only made it worse. It's gone sky high during the pandemic.
So, Dr. Ludwig, the coroner, you know, I really needed clarity because he said yesterday in the public news conference, you know, the situations of domestic violence, I'm paraphrasing, but we all thought, wow, holy Moses, are you saying what we think you're saying? You're connecting domestic violence to the case that was on the table in front of you, which can only mean one thing. It wasn't her dad, that it would be Brian Laundrie. And then he sort of obfuscated later on and said it was inadvertent. That doesn't clear it up. And then today with Brian, he said that he was quite clear that he, quote, didn't have any direct evidence of that. But the fact that this had happened in Moab, should we assume ever that it's a one-off, that the incident that you saw play out on that body cam? Was there any clue that you saw in there with your expertise, Robbie, to say that is not the first time?
No, and also I saw evidence of psychological abuse. At one point, Gabby was saying that Brian was very upset with her, that he didn't believe in her ability to have a successful blog, which was something that she was working on, how Gabby took responsibility for Brian acting out. She hit him first. She had OCD. So we see the psychological mindset where she was convinced by Brian that everything was her fault. And of course, that's not the case. And also, there's a misconception, too, with physical abuse and violence within relationships, that the partner who kills their lover, that somehow they don't love them. And so very often these victims think, well, my partner loves me. They would never hurt me. But very often in these cases, a partner who's violent does kill the person that they love. And in their mind, they're thinking, if I could just get rid of the bad parts, the frustrating parts, then we can have a successful relationship. And it's really a misguided notion of how relationships work and an over-idealization of what a happy relationship looks like as well.
So, ladies, we're going to go to break, but I want to play something for you before we go to break and get your thoughts on it after the break. It's the final conclusion, really, that the police in Moab came to, and they discussed it between themselves through an open passenger window to a police officer who was driving. So it's two officers speaking about what they feel like they just kind of processed in this whole event between Gabby and Brian. Take a look at this, and after the break, we're gonna parse that and figure out if there was something really missed. Take a look.
The reason why they don't give us discretion on these things is because too many times women who are at risk want to go back to their abuser. They just wanted him to stop, and they don't want to have to be separated. They don't want him charged. They don't want him to go to jail. And then they end up getting worse and worse treatment, and then they end up getting killed. Mm-hmm. In no way, shape, or form that I can perceive does what happened here, a little slap fight between fiancés who love each other and want to be together, can I perceive that this is going to digress into the situation where he's going to be a battered man?
Right.
But then again, I don't have a crystal ball.
Then again, I don't have a crystal ball. A slap fight between two people who really want to be together. Well, let's dig into that in just a moment. Back with Robbie Ludwig and Liz Wheel. Liz, you know, before the break, we saw that moment where the police said this looked like a slap fight between the two people who really want to be together. She said he did it first. She said she did it first, so I don't think he's going to be a battered man, but I don't have a crystal ball. A lot of people have jumped all over those police officers and said, how could they have let that happen? How could they have let them go? But the reality is in the world of the law, that incident pales in comparison to probably 10 other incidents they saw that day.
Right. They're in a tough position. They don't know this couple. Remember, they're traveling through. There's no history that they can pull up of domestic violence between them. So they're in kind of a difficult position. Could they have done more? Possibly. But I do understand kind of what happened there. I want to just say something real quick, Ashley, about the medical examiner saying that there was no direct evidence of domestic violence. That's not really for him to say direct evidence of anything, because domestic violence is an action, obviously. But he did not say it wasn't consistent with domestic violence. And that would be the question he were to be asked if you were on the stand as the medical examiner at a trial, for example. Is this consistent? Is what you saw consistent with domestic violence? He could answer that versus saying this is direct evidence of domestic violence.
Fascinating. Robbie, 15 seconds left. Just really quickly, you know, the kind of thing you saw out of Moab, would it be a real leap to jump to murder from what you witnessed?
It could be, and it could be even if they were separated that Gabby and Brian would have found each other, because Gabby could have felt that she could fix Brian and heal him, and Brian may have been in denial about how dangerous he actually was to Gabby. Yeah. So it's very complicated.
It really is. I can't thank both of you enough, Lee Swill and Dr. Robbie Ludwig. I hope you'll both come back. Also, just want to make a note while you're still with me that if you're watching and you've had some issues, please don't just assume they'll go away. There's a domestic abuse hotline for the nation, and it's 1-800-799-SAFE. It's on your screen, 1-800-799-SAFE. Give them a call. You don't have to say who you are, but you sure can get help. Thanks for being with us tonight. We'll see you right back here tomorrow.